On the surface, you have, number one, a huge organization that has obviously a military focus versus a group of artists who are a relatively small group. And yet, Chris, when you look at the style of leadership in Admiral Vern Clark, who was the Chief of Navy Operations from 2000 to 2005, and compare that to Bono, who is in a sense the leader of the group U2, there are similarities in the way that they reach out to make the other people they're responsible for leading and working with feel connected to them as leaders, and just how critical that is for the success of any leader.
Jason, talk a little bit about how do you, we always talk about leadership, but how do you make it real? How do you make it, it sounds so elusive.
And it really is an art more than a science. What we've looked at as we've studied great leaders all throughout history is we've looked at leaders not only who are great at what we call task excellence. They understood their function, like Bono's a great singer, or Admiral Vern Clark, he understands how to functionally make the Navy work well. But the thing that sets the true great leaders that we've studied apart from those that were, average or even failed leaders, in our opinion, is that they were also what we call great connectors. They had a relational excellence about them that helped them connect with people. They understood that people aren't just human doings, that they're human beings. And so you can't just relate to people in a functional way. You have to make a personal connection with them and learn, if you're going to lead another human being, you have to learn what it means to be human and lead them as if you understand that and relate to them as if you understand, for example, their universal human needs or, their desire to be a participant in the process and not just do what you say, but to be brought into it, to be connected or engaged in the journey. And great leaders seem to really get that and do that well.
And this is something that you write about in a piece called To Boost Performance, Connect with the Core. And that's the core that you're talking about.
That's correct.
Mike, sometimes people say, what's the relationship between performance and leadership? Is there a connection here? Is that quantifiable?
Well, absolutely, Chris. And I think if you look at recent research, it shows that, in fact, a group that's in the Washington, D.C. area, the Corporate Executive Board, came out with a report last year that showed 75% of American employees, and this is broadly based, all industries, for-profit, non-profit, government, on average, 75% of employees in organizations are not engaged in their jobs. They don't feel connected, and they're not giving their best efforts. They're showing up for the paycheck, but they just don't feel energized. They don't feel connected with the organization. And of the 25% who are connected and engaged, 60% of them, Chris, are not aligned with the organization's objectives. So the bottom line there is 90% of employees in organizations in America are either not engaged in giving their best efforts or they're not aligned on the right objectives. That's a big problem. And leadership, this ability that Jason just talked about, the ability to connect relationally is critical to engage people and get them to become aligned and engaged and give their best efforts.
And in this paper, you talk a lot about finding bridges that connect you with that core. One of them is the vision thing, and we always talk about the vision thing, but I'm not sure folks really, what are we talking about when we're talking about that bridge to the vision, that vision bridge?
Well, let me take this. One of the ways that we describe vision is creating an inspiring identity, an inspiring corporate identity that everybody buys into. We believe that that exists in an organization when everybody is motivated by the mission, united by the values, and proud of the reputation. Over the past 30, 40 years, it's been kind of in vogue to create a mission statement and put it up on the wall or create value statements and put them up on the wall. But more and more of the companies that we go and work with and talk to, first of all, I can get very few of them to recite the mission or values. And so it obviously doesn't seem like it's penetrating into their, how they do what they do.
Most of them that I see tend to be these long, sometimes paragraphs long.
Exactly.
And how does that ever touch you in any way?
Right. And so what we try and help leaders understand is you need to become the mission. You will reproduce who you are, not who you think you are. Some of them think they're that mission, but then they live very differently, very self-centeredly, really. And the leaders who are really what we describe as servant leaders and who are really committed to the mission and live out the values, that becomes infectious, contagious, if you will, and it just spills out to everybody else. And one of the things that we talk about over and over in our workshops is that whatever gets measured gets done.
Yeah.
And so part of the issue
So be careful what you measure.
Exactly. You do want to be careful, but be careful what you're not measuring, too. And what we're not measuring in corporate America is how they are or are not measuring up to living into the mission and living according to our values. And it really creates a reputation they're not very proud of it in the end.
And I think part of these mission statements, they end up getting, it becomes a cursory task rather than something that becomes a real value. And again, I'm reminded of that Mark Twain quote, I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one instead.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what happens with these mission statements. Everyone just keeps throwing stuff in there instead of focusing on, hey, what do we really care about? What is our vision of what this organization is going to be?
Yeah, Chris, yeah. And they spend very little time on it. And I think, you know, that's what they work on it and it goes on the shelf. And that's, you know, like Jason says, nobody seems to know their mission or values. And that's what you see in the examples of Admiral Clark and Bono, that the vision, the mission, the values, the reputation of the group is very important to them. You look at Admiral Clark's case, you know, he came in and he talked to people around the Navy about it. And when he came in, the Navy was not in 2000. The Navy was not meeting its first-term reenlistment goal of 38%. He came in and he talked about how proud he was to serve alongside people who served a cause greater than self, you know, defending the greatest country in history and defending freedom in the world. And he talked about building the 21st century Navy that's faster, more networked with the other services and with allies. He really laid out a vision and values that connected with people and made them feel proud. And you look at U2, they talk about, Bono talks about the spark, he calls it, which is that they're more than entertainers. They're, Bono's words is, I'm a traveling salesman.
Yeah.
And what he and the band promote are human rights and social justice. And that is the spark that makes their work different than just entertainment.
And the other thing you talk about in this piece is the voice bridge. What is the voice bridge? Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. There's actually two more bridges that we talk about, the value bridge and the voice bridge. And we call these three bridges kind of our core elements that create connection in a community or in an organization. But do you want me to cover both of them real quick?
Yeah, great.
Yeah, so the value bridge is basically treating each other like human beings, as I mentioned before. It's when everybody understands everybody's basic universal psychological needs, appreciates everyone's unique contribution, and helps one another achieve their potential. It's basically trying to create a relational environment where we are stopping finally, and this is at epidemic proportions. I mean, it can't be understated that we're functionally relating to one another like human doings. We treat each other in a quid pro quo way, you know, that I will relate to you, I will care about you, I will invest in you as long as I'm getting something from you. And when I stop getting something from you, you stop mattering to me.
Yeah.
And until we stop that kind of relational, it's really a toxic environment. And we can show you statistic after statistic to prove it. It really leads to death, not only relationally, but physically, biochemically, intellectually, emotionally, all these different ways. It creates isolated people who don't thrive. And so leaders who connect get this. And they care about people, and people understand that they care about them, just because they're breathing. Yes, they care about them because they're part of the team and they're working on the task together and all that, but there's a connection that transcends that they understand that they're valued because they're human. And that's why we call that, you know, human value. Of course they should be valued because of the task excellence and what they bring to the team and how they're helping, all that. But do you just value me because I'm alive. I mean, you know, and until you can connect with people at that level, it really is shallow connection.
Michael, and Michael, so often we talk about the most important thing we have are our people, and yet you almost get the feeling that sometimes our organizations don't actually live that. It becomes just words, and so people tend not to take that very seriously.
Well, that's so true, and that's why one of the things we love about the article is it has these great examples of leaders. You look at Admiral Clark, he supported a pay raise for the enlisted class because he felt it was they were underpaid. He went out and spoke to the master chiefs who lead the enlisted class and told them about when he first became a commanding officer on his first ship, his first command. He had a master chief on board by the name of Leedy who came up to him about a week after he was on board and said, you know, Vern, I like you, or Mr. Clark, I like you, and I'm going to help make you a fine officer. And this experienced master chief helped Admiral Clark become the leader he grew to become over the years. And Admiral Clark recognized that. And he asked the master chiefs that they needed to reach out and mentor, provide the training, the encouragement to help the enlisted sailors become better sailors and better human beings, just like Master Chief Leedy did to him. And it really connected with the master chiefs. About 18 months after Admiral Clark became CNO, the Navy's first term reenlistment soared from, as I said earlier, under 38% to 56.7%. So really a remarkable change in how a leader connected with the core employees of the organization.
Perfect. That's what I need. Anything else I didn't ask you about that I should have? Oof.
Well, we could talk a little bit about the voice bridge.
Hold on, let me, how's this? Oh, here, volume. I don't know why this keeps getting turned up. Talk a little bit about the voice bridge, because that one seems the most difficult to understand. People can understand values, and while we might not have mission and vision, we at least understand the concept. But the voice one sounds much more complex.
Yeah, Chris, just to mention it too, we might want, if you think this is appropriate, we could talk about McChrystal firing.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Certainly very timely.
Yes.
Well, let me just say something about that, and then, Jace, do you want to talk about voice a little more?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, just in terms of value, when you look at Admiral Vern Clark, and you look at Bono and U2, and compare it to the profile of General McChrystal that just ran recently in Rolling Stone and ultimately led to his the president's accepting his resignation, it showed two very different types of leaders here. You see Admiral Clark, who really reached out and valued the enlisted class. He invested in training. He gave them some input into the assignment system, created this reverse eBay bidding system for jobs around the Navy. And there's just a consistent pattern of valuing people. When you look at the profile in Rolling Stone of McChrystal, you don't see he's disrespectful, and you can see a failure to really connect with the people he works with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And it's just a huge difference when you compare two leaders who don't really value people as human beings, just like Jason was talking about earlier.
And that's not only, that's both ways, up and down the chain.
Right, absolutely. It's no question he's competent. But it takes more than competence to be an effective leader. You have to connect with people, and that ultimately is based on character, and character strengths like humility, respect for others. Those types of character strengths really help create that bridge that connects a leader to the people he or she is responsible for leading.
Jason, talk a little bit about this concept of voice. As I said, I don't think most people actually fully we get vision. We may not do it, but we get what it is. But the voice one was maybe not in most people's understanding.
Right. Well, the voice bridge just flows out of who we are. I mean, everybody wants to have a say. You know, America's a wonderful example of this, right? You know, back on, when we were under the British Empire, we didn't have a voice. You know, taxation without representation, and that didn't work for us. You know, so you could go all the way back to, it's a very disrespectful thing to not want to hear what another thinks about something. It puts them down, makes them feel unvalued, all the rest. The way we describe voice is, the subtitle for that is knowledge flow. We believe that knowledge flow exists in an organization when people seek one another's ideas and opinions, share those ideas and opinions honestly, and then safeguard relational connections while they're doing that. So there's this wonderful flow of knowledge. When you see this happening in organizations that do this well, it is powerful to watch. They come up with the best ideas because what they're doing is they're tapping into the corporate mind, not just the minds of maybe the senior leader or the senior leadership staff. They're creating a dialogue within everybody in the organization where we're going to mine out and find the great ideas and how to hone it and make it really excellent. But in most organizations we go to, there are knowledge traps, we like to call knowledge traps, everywhere. You know, there's you know, all kinds of roadblocks to this kind of flow. Pride, arrogance, all kinds of things that are stopping people from actually wanting to share or even from being asked to share. And it's a real hindrance. In our workshops, we use oodles and oodles of examples of how to make this right. But Mike uses a great one right from Vern Clark.
Mike?
Yeah, Admiral Clark.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Admiral Clark, he went out and he promoted what he called constructive friction, Chris. And he wanted people to push back. He said, I want us to challenge every assumption, be data-driven, drill down into the details. He was asking for people to, you know, to push back, to share ideas. If we're not doing our very best in improving the Navy every day, then we're not doing our job. So he really went out there, like we see all the great leaders doing, and they're asking for people to share their opinions about what's right, what's wrong, what's missing from their leaders' thinking, because they want to, ultimately, these are character issues. The great leaders are not about being great themselves, but about doing, accomplishing something great, and that's what inspires people like Vern Clark and Bono.